Runaway Country is brought to you by Miracle Made. Here is a gross fact. Traditional bed sheets can hold more bacteria than a toilet seat. You're welcome. Yeah, it's not exactly what you want to lay your face on. Miracle Made bedding is designed to fight bacteria and stay cleaner longer with silver-infused fabrics that actually prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. And all that bacteria in regular sheets, it can clog your pores and it can cause breakouts, and nobody wants that. Miracle Made's antibacterial design helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. Miracle Made sheets are crafted with NASA-inspired silver-infused fabric that helps regulate your body temperature. Hot sleeper, cold sleeper, medium sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets help keep you in the comfort zone all night long. And they feel just as good, if not better, than sheets you'd find at a five-star hotel, but without the steep price tag, which is nice. Smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable. Upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/Alex to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use promo code Alex, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. What a deal. Take that, 5-star hotels. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/Alex, code Alex at checkout. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Hi, everyone. It has been a pretty extraordinary week. Last Wednesday, two members of the National Guard, Sarah Beckstrom and Andrew Wolf, were shot while patrolling the streets of Washington, D.C. Beckstrom was killed, and Wolf remains in critical condition. The alleged shooter is a 29-year-old Afghan national named Rahmanullah Lakhanwal, who was once part of the CIA-backed Zero Squads operating in Afghanistan. Those were highly controversial paramilitary units, and they were unofficially known as death squads. When Afghanistan fell back into the hands of the Taliban in 2021, Lakhanwal evacuated to the U.S. After many rounds of vetting, he was admitted into the country under the Biden administration, and then he was granted asylum under the Trump administration. And now that same administration is using Wednesday's deadly event as a pretense for essentially overhauling American immigration as we know it.
What do you mean by reverse migration?
It means get people out that are in our country. Get them out of here. I want to get them out.
As of this recording, President Trump has now indefinitely paused all immigration applications, frozen the green card process, and stopped processing citizenship applications for people from 19 countries. That list includes Afghanistan, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, Venezuela, Haiti, and Burma, some of the poorest and most unstable places in the world. And they also happen to be countries with predominantly Black and Brown populations. In addition to that, the State Department has halted all visas for Afghan citizens. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration, also known as USCIS, announced that it is pausing all asylum-related decisions until they, quote, ensure that every alien is vetted and screened to the maximum degree possible. And the Trump administration is now planning to review all asylum cases approved by the Biden White House, which includes people already living here in the United States. All of this, a massive retrenchment of the American immigration system because of the actions of one violent man. These new rules could affect over 1.5 million people who have pending asylum applications and 50,000 more who received asylum under President Biden. The shooting last week was a terrible tragedy. But make no mistake, the Trump administration is using it for a very specific political purpose. I'm Alex Wagner, and this week on Runaway Country, we're talking about the ways in which the Trump administration is using that violent Thanksgiving attack to push an agenda of ethno-nationalism, to redefine who is American and who isn't. On today's episode, I spoke to a former aid worker from Afghanistan who is now living in the U.S. as a green card holder. He is exactly the kind of person that the Trump White House is now targeting, and he spoke to me under the condition that we not use his full name because he's afraid of being deported. So we're calling him Nassim. Nassim worked with U.S. government agencies beginning in 2005, on over 80 projects in Afghanistan.
95% of those projects supported by U.S., funded by U.S. government and USAID. Very sensitive projects on countering violence of extremism, projects on education, elimination of violence against women, women access to justice, a lot of projects on counter-narcotics, and projects on youth empowerment, girls empowerment, education projects, and civil rights, women rights, human rights.
When Kabul fell in 2021, Nassim and his family went into hiding. The projects he had been working on, had been leading for the U.S. government, were seen as treasonous in the eyes of the Taliban. After several months of vetting and extensive security checks, Nassim and his family were granted asylum in the United States, where they lived in relative safety and freedom until last week. Now, with Trump's new immigration agenda and his targeting of both Afghans and asylum seekers, Nassim is very worried about what happens next.
Although I'm a green card holder, I'm scared. Well, if we go back to the country, we are just victims. They will punish us because why we work with the United States and supported the same values. We will be punished for that, for sure. Sometimes even my son says that if let's say ICE come to the school, what should I do?
What do you tell him?
He has a telephone. Say that I said that. Call me directly.
And then what will you do?
Tell your. I do not have anything else. Otherwise, I just go and talk with attorneys or people that they helped us in the past for the green card or for my SIV. I do not have any other choice.
I asked Nassim about the shooting last week, and he told me that what unites Afghans like him and National Guards people like them is the suffering. And in that shared experience, there is extraordinary empathy.
I feel sympathy with these two National Guards. Who can feel better than us? We were the victim of the violence, extremism back in our country. Every day there was people losing their lives. I can feel the pain that family, particularly in this Thanksgiving day, that they have the family of the victim of these two National Guards. It's horrible. And we all condemn that.
But as terrifying as this moment is for Nassim, he has not given up on America, nor has he given up on its promise.
We came here to be part of the American community and serve this country as well, serve humanity. My understanding is that back the values that we discussed and we were together, that was democracy, peaceful, freedom from the violence. So I came with the hope that I will live here in peace and I will work here and be responsible as every responsible American person that who are living here and finally become a citizen and play my role in the society in the best positive manner.
When we come back, I'll be joined by my friend and former colleague at MS Now, nay, MSNBC, Joy Reid. Joy was, of course, the host of The Readout, and she has written a book about Trump called The Man Who Sold America. And now she hosts The Joy Reid Show, which everybody should and must check out on YouTube. Joy weighs in on Trump's not-so-secret plan to make America white again.
They'll distribute the bleach to us all, and totally. We shall apply it daily if you want to survive.
Totally. Totally.
I got her thoughts on what's happening to immigrants, green card holders, and asylum seekers, given the fact that over 50 million U.S. residents were born in another country, and nearly three quarters of that population is here legally. Not that the Trump administration seems to care. Because it's not about where you were born or whether you followed the rules. It's clearly about the color of your skin. Our conversation in just a minute. Runaway Country is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. Christmas parties, holiday dinners, late night gift wrapping with a glass of eggnog. I feel so seen. It is the season for celebration. Just do not forget to start your night with pre-alcohol.
ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here is how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that is to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your very first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you will feel your best tomorrow. Every time I have had pre-alcohol before drinks, I truly notice a difference the next day, even after a night out. And those are few and far between, so I make them count. Even after a night out, I can confidently plan on parenting my children to the best of my abilities, going to work out, thinking smart things about podcasts and politics. I can do all of that without worry. That's just a day in the life. Make the most of every toast this holiday season. Just don't forget to bring pre-alcohol along for the ride. Go to zbiotics.com/Alex to learn more and to get 15% off your first order when you use Alex at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you are unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/Alex and use the code Alex at checkout for 15% off. I mean, I don't know. America's been waiting for this reunion. I've certainly been waiting for this reunion. My friend and former colleague, one of the lights of my life as a journalist, my old friend Joy Reid, not old. Like, you're not old.
Young and
but
fresh.
But our friendship, you are young and fresh. Our friendship is aged. Old. It's old and gold.
It's old and gold, baby. I miss you so much.
I miss you too. This is like, I'm so happy to see you and thank you for doing this. And God, there's a lot to talk about.
So much, girl. I mean, dude.
Yeah, dude. Period. We're done. Okay. So there's so, I mean, the focus of this week, there were many things to choose from, but we're talking about this, there was a shooting last week, which I know you're well aware of, a National Guard troop, and Trump has effectively used that as an excuse to further terrorize Black and brown communities and wholeheartedly embrace white nationalism at the topmost echelons of the federal government. So one of the things he's done, he's really basically ending the asylum process. He's not making America a home for refugees. The whole Statue of Liberty thing is like, whatever that was. And I just want to get your kind of top line reaction to the president of the United States effectively ending the American immigration system as we have known it for the last 50 years.
Yeah, it's and taking it back to the 1920s, right?
Yeah.
The era when, ironically, Stephen Miller's family barely escaped the Exclusion Act that would have kept them trapped in Germany, where they all would have died. And when it was not our finest hour, the 1930s, when we didn't want to take in Jewish refugees, we were excluding Asian immigrants. And we're, you know, the past is prologue because we are right back there again, because this is the era that a lot of Donald Trump's minions, Stephen Miller, Tom Homan, I'm not sure Kristi Noem thinks things. I think she just does whatever.
I don't know that she's like a cat. I was told that cats don't understand the passage of time, or it's like flat, like a dimension to them. I think that's sort of how Kristi Noem, she doesn't understand history or time.
Cats also don't like dogs. And would probably shoot them if they could.
That is
as
true.
As would Kristi Noem.
I mean, I have a cat, so I don't want to malign cats too much.
I had a great cat. Yeah. And my cat actually liked my dog.
In the way that a house pet doesn't fully grapple with the implications of the real world, I think the same could be said for the Secretary of Homeland Security.
I would agree with that. I think Tom Homan does grapple with it, and he has a deep hatred of all mankind, and he's getting to exercise that. He and Stephen Miller, they're sort of the two kind of horses of the apocalypse. And so, and I also don't think Donald Trump thinks things. You know, I think Donald Trump is just a knee-jerk racist old person who is, if you tell him, the Somalians, as he calls the Somalis, are taking over Minnesota. He says, yeah, let's get them out. Get them out. You know, so I think he's just having it.
And you're referring to the raids that were announced on Tuesday in Minnesota, which is
exactly.
part and parcel of like this suite of actions designed to remove people of color from this country, regardless of what their legal status is, whether they've been here for generations, whether they're American citizens. And really, we're going to get into this, but bleach the country. I want to first talk about the political implications of some of this, because, you know, Trump's promise. And I remember you and I were on set at MS, formerly NBC.
Ms. Now. Their name is Now.
Ms. Now. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, I remember seeing these signs at the Republican National Convention that said mass deportations now. And I guess if we're giving the people at that convention the benefit of the doubt, the expectation, as Trump promised, would be that he would deport the, quote, worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, the 19-year-old college student who was trying to return home to her family for Thanksgiving, Annie Lucia Lopez Beloza, who was then detained at Boston Airport and is now been deported to Honduras. The worst of the worst, Joy.
Yeah.
My thinking is, like, you look at the polling, and this stuff is not popular with the American public, right? The ICE raids, the drag nets, you know, what it's doing to the economy, and to say nothing, the moral stain on America's hands. But he keeps doing it. Like, they keep going full steam ahead. You referred to the Somali raids and the raids on the Somali community in Minnesota. What do you mean, is it them just trying to reach the quotas? It doesn't seem politically expeditious. And I wonder if you think he even considers the politics at this point, or kind of like what the motivating factor is.
Well, I actually think he is considering the politics of it. And, you know, I can remember sitting there with you as, you know, Jacob Soboroff was on the floor of the Republican convention with these senior citizen women with huge smiles on their face, waving their mass deportation now signs. And Jacob would ask them, I think incredulously, "You're so joyful about this idea of mass deportation. Do you really mean it?" And they, "Oh, yes," they really meant it. And, you know, I, having been inside of a Republican National Convention and had that vibe from a senior citizen, someone's grandma, but whose glee was directed towards some of the most heinous ideas you could imagine, right? You know, sort of gleeful towards sort of returning to 1930s Germany, not even the United States. Like, I know that it's real. I actually think that what those people wanted and what Donald Trump is delivering is ethnic cleansing.
Right. Well,
I think, you know, I think it, and I don't think that they see it as ethnic cleansing. I don't think they see it as something bad. I think that they looked at the true fact that the number of immigrants who are non-European has risen over time, rose after 1965, when the other thing LBJ did, Lyndon Johnson did, in addition to the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act, he also signed this landmark immigration bill that ended the Asian Exclusion Act and that really fundamentally changed the complexion, literally, of our immigrant communities from being very, very European, very Italian, very Irish, very, you know, even Scandinavian, all of that, to being very brown, to being largely from Central America, largely from South and Central America. That's a fact. It's a thing that happened from the 60s on. And then you had another surge during COVID.
Yeah.
When you had this two factors, COVID, which was driving people out of work and into desperation, and COVID on this end of the border that was pulling brown people into the jobs we needed done. The meat packing plants, the farms, the places where you needed labor that couldn't go home and hide from the pandemic. And they were drawn here by the millions. I mean, something like 11 million people. And that surge of brown migration caused our latest demographic panic. You know, there was a demographic panic when Barack Obama was elected, and there was the demographic panic post the pandemic. And the rage that you can detect if you talk to enough MAGA-type people or experience them is real. They really hate the fact that there's so many brown people here. And I'm not trying to be ungenerous. I think they would agree with me that they are really angry about that border opening up during the pandemic and the years during the Biden administration when so many brown people came here, that they don't want just the worst of the worst to be gone. They want them all gone. And Donald Trump is implementing the ethnic cleansing he knows his core base wants. And the ones who are alarmed by it are the more mild Trump supporters, the sort of more, you know, the maybe economic Trump supporters, the people who wanted tax cuts, the people who maybe wanted the border closed, but maybe didn't want to see their neighbor get dragged off. Those people don't like it. But there's still a core of people who love it. They love it. They want it.
More of my conversation with Joy Reid right after this quick break.
Runaway Country is brought to you by Fable. When I find something that makes everyday life just a little bit more beautiful and more sustainable, I want to share it. This is one of those times. Fable makes modern, minimalist homeware that is actually built to last. Think gorgeous ceramics that are dishwasher safe, non-toxic, no lead or cadmium in these pieces. They are ethically made, they are surprisingly sturdy, and each piece is truly one of a kind. Fable partners with artisans in Portugal and uses recycled and locally sourced clay, so it's not just good looking, it is good for the planet too, which is awesome. Plus, plastic-free packaging. Even takeout looks better on these plates. If you're hosting this season or just, you know, elevating your everyday meals, this is an easy way to make things feel more special. The pieces are made in Japan, and even though they're super thin and lightweight, they are ion toughened for superior durability, making them 1.6 times stronger and scratch resistant. I mean, it's so awesome. Fable's sleek, modern, and dishwasher safe, so it is perfect for everyday use. Head to fable.com/crooked to learn more. New customers get 15% off with code crooked15. They've got fast shipping, great reviews, and some beautiful new collections out now. If you care about quality, sustainability, and design, visit fable.com/crooked. Use code crooked15 for 15% off your first Fable order. This is one brand that walks the talk. For people who have not paid attention to the ways in which this administration has explicitly embraced ethnic cleansing, right? There is the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, which on X officially called for remigration to be U.S. policy. The quote is, the stakes have never been higher and the goal has never been more clear. Remigration now, which is a term used by the far right in Europe. It's embraced by white nationalists. Kristi Noem, the department of that federal agency, posted this to Twitter. I just met with the president. I am recommending a full travel ban on every damn country that's been flooding our nation with killers, leeches, and entitlement junkies. First of all, leeches. That's just leeches, killers, and entitlement junkies are our forefathers. And that's an exclusionary hour, not an inclusionary hour. Mm-hmm. Our forefathers built this nation on blood, sweat, and the unyielding love of freedom, not for foreign invaders to slaughter our heroes, suck dry our hard-earned tax dollars, or snatch the benefits owed to all caps Americans. Mm. All caps, we don't want them. All caps, not one. And then, of course, there's Trump himself, the president of the United States, who said only reverse migration can fully cure this situation. And Stephen Miller, whose own family came to this country fleeing religious persecution in the early 1900s. That guy, Stephen Miller, had this to say.
What you heard tonight from President Trump, the breaking news here tonight, is saying that his government is going to accelerate efforts to review every person added to this country over the last 20 years, or the last 4 years, all 20 million. Now, obviously, if you're illegal, you're out automatically. But everybody else who was brought here, refugee, asylum status, whatever status, as he said, if you're not someone who loves this country, if you're not any benefit to this country, then we're going to send you out of this country. Because it's enough already. No one else has to die. No one else has to be murdered. No one else has to be shot. No more empty seats are needed at the Thanksgiving table or the Christmas table because of what Democrats have done to this country.
I mean, just like a bastardized Charles Dickens reference in there as he, you know, does the most un-Christmas-like thing you can do, the most uncharitable thing you can do. Which is shut America's doors to the, you know, the those in need. And
the huddled masses yearning to
huddled,
be free.
Exactly. I was trying to think of the inscription on the base of the Statue of Liberty. Do you think this was always the natural endpoint to MAGA, or do you think Trump himself has become more radicalized while in office?
I think Donald Trump is a youthful idiot. And I think MAGA is the natural outgrowth of a far right that has kind of catapulted itself into power despite literally being a far right, you know, what would have been a politically untenable movement even a generation ago. There has been a demographic panic that's been ongoing in this country from the very beginning, right? The You want to talk about what is it? Leeches, killers, mm-hmm. and junkies for what, free money?
It is killers, leeches, and entitlement junkies.
Right. So this nation was founded by killers who slaughtered 90% of the indigenous people. Leeches who glommed off of the indigenous who taught them how to survive in the wilderness and then murdered them as their things and then took all their land. And you want to talk about entitlement. They felt entitled to own other people and they didn't even want to pay taxes on it. So they decided to have a whole war with Britain. So I'm not really 100% sure where that's coming from. And then you...
Oh, I have a sense of where it's coming from.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, then what you have is people like Stephen Miller, whose people came here in the 20th century. So they are not related in any way to the forefathers, and the forefathers wouldn't have wanted them here. They wouldn't have wanted them here. They wouldn't have wanted Tom Homan's family here. They wouldn't have wanted any of these people here. They come from the people who at one time were considered excluded, but now they have a full sense of entitlement to decide who is a proper and fitting American and to vet them ideologically. But really what they're doing is vetting them in terms of color. Because, as the Supreme Court has allowed, they're essentially saying, we get to be here because even if we are not descended from the forefathers, we're white. You don't get to be here because you're brown, you're Asian, or you're Black. And therefore, whether you're a citizen, not, he said, whether you have TPS status, whether you've got refugee status, we don't care. Unless you vet ideologically, and even if you do, there have been some hardcore Trump supporters who've been deported. They want to ethnically cleanse the country and make it whiter. They're not really being that coy about it. They're not being too cute about it. They're kind of being open about it because they keep saying everyone who came into the country in their mind during the Biden years, and they really kind of also mean before that, they want them out. And the quota is just a means to an end. It's to motivate his goons, or I guess Kristi Noem's goons, to get out there and stop any brown person apartheid style, throw them in a van and get them the hell out of here, or put them in a private prison where at least somebody can make a profit off of their presence. So, you know, the way you can be a benefit to this country if you're brown is go to a private prison so that, you know, the core civic or whatever they call themselves can get rich.
I think the violence directed at a National Guards person, at two National Guards, a National Guardsman and a National Guardswoman have provided Trump an excuse to enact some of the more draconian policies that have ever been enacted in this country. But, you know, you point out that he's been relatively explicit about his desires, or like the administration writ large has been relatively explicit about their motivations and their end game for a while. And some people paid attention to remarks that J.D. Vance, our vice president, gave at the Claremont Institute, a conservative institution, this summer. But he kind of explained like where this was all headed. And I want to just play a little bit of sound from his remarks to call to attention the sort of the way in which the roadmap was made public, at least if you were listening to what J.D. Vance was saying at the Claremont Institute this summer. Let's take a listen.
If you think about it, identifying America just with agreeing with the principles, let's say, of the Declaration of Independence, that's a definition that is way over-inclusive and under-inclusive at the same time. What do I mean by that? Well, first of all, it would include hundreds of millions, maybe billions of foreign citizens who agree with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. Must we admit all of them tomorrow? If you follow that logic of America as a purely creedal nation, America purely as an idea, that is where it would lead you.
Okay, like setting aside the time frame and whatever, just the argument that America is a concept has been rejected wholesale by the right, and in favor of blood and soil nationalism.
That's right.
Right? That's literally what he's saying there. He's like, you know what? If it's not just a set of principles. It's literally like, were you born here and are you white? I mean, he's not saying that, but that's effectively what the criteria is as laid out by the vice president of the United States. And I kind of just wonder, Joy, like, where does that leave us? Because, you know, Trump is not going to, though he would like to be in office forever, probably for the next 12 years or whatever, it's 18. I can't even do the math anymore, but he's supposed to leave office in 2028. Maybe J.D. Vance inherits the throne. Maybe little Marco does. It's unclear, but I don't understand what the implications of all of this are for the American project. And I don't mean to sound hyperbolic, but how do you begin to sort of put the toothpaste in the tube when one side has explicitly said we reject the very idea that is sort of foundational in your idea of in your notions of governance? I guess, where do we go from here?
I mean, not in a good place. I mean, Mehdi Hasan has made this point in interviews that he's done, that he, as somebody who is a naturalized American, first of all, probably knows more facts about American history than most Americans, because you had to take a test and tell those facts in order to get your citizenship. And he has a wholesale belief in the entire American experiment. He chose the country on purpose. And one could argue that he is a more faithful American than Donald Trump, who doesn't believe in any of the principles of the Constitution. He doesn't even pretend to go along with the strictures on the Article II power. He doesn't care. He's just doing whatever he wants and thinks the Article I power works for him. And yet, according to J.D. Vance, Donald Trump is more of an American simply because his family, as white Bavarians, emigrated here in the 1840s. And, the father and though his grandparents are immigrants, doesn't matter. And his mother, I believe, is also an immigrant from Scotland. They're white. And so they're obviously American. And he goes on in that speech that you played to say, the people who fought in the Civil War, meaning on the Southern side against us, our enemies in the Civil War, are more fundamentally American than any immigrant who believes in the Constitution, because they put their blood in the soil. So he literally did the blood and soil thing, almost literally. Take it even further. Senator Schmidt he's from Missouri. He was even more.
Eric Schmidt.
He said it even more clear. He said, this country belongs to the pilgrims who defeated, and this is not my word, but he essentially referred to the indigenous as the savages who tried to stand in the way of the pilgrims' progress. This country belongs to those white people who defeated them. And also he omitted the idea that enslaved people built the country. He, I guess, laughs at that idea. It just belongs to white people. He kind of said it a little more bluntly. And I think that's what MAGA is. MAGAism, when they say make America great again, they mean white people own the country, white Christians specifically, own the country. And they inherit it from all of the Browns, all of the Asians, all of the people who are white but don't go along with the project. They don't get to have the country. They're here at the permission and by the grace of white Christians. And that's the country they want. It's what Project 2025 basically says. Women will be obedient and make more babies. Men will be straight and not gay. There will be no trans. There will be nothing that gets in the way of reproducing a white uniform society. And if it seems like I'm being hyperbolic, just look at the Department of Labor's own ad campaign. It's all over their Twitter. They haven't taken any of them down. It just shows white, sort of European idyllic cartoon person after white European idyllic cartoon person saying, this is America. This is the homeland. Defend the homeland. Defend this white-looking family. And it's all white people who literally looks like the old Communist Party ads from the 20s or the old Nazi ads from the 30s. That's our Department of Labor.
Well, also, the Vice President of the United States, for all of his lust and fervor for white Americans, is married to an Indian woman.
Correct. She's going to find God and go to Christianity. Right.
This is the thing, the self-interest here. I mean, I understand J.D. Vance on one hand. Yes, this is a white person, but the children he's making are brown children.
One of the kids is named Vivek.
Exactly.
And you know what's so interesting? You showed the Claremont Institute. That is where Christopher Rufo made his bones at being Mr. Anti-Critical Race Theory. His wife, Ty, and was undocumented. Make that make sense.
We'll be back with more of my talk with Joy Reid after this break. Runaway Country is brought to you by Wild Alaskan Company. When was the last time you truly trusted the seafood you brought home? Not like you're interviewing a salmon and wondering whether you can trust its answer, but like trusted the quality of the seafood you were bringing home to eat. I used to question everything from nutrition and taste to sustainability until I discovered Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company is the best way to get wild-caught, perfectly portioned, nutrient-dense seafood delivered directly to your door. Trust me, you have not tasted fish this good. I have been cooking it, marinating it in a little miso sometimes, a little glaze in the oven, roasted or broiled. So nice with some greens and rice. Even my difficult, crazy children love it. Why choose wild-caught seafood? Well, it is 100% wild-caught, is never farmed. That means there are no antibiotics, GMOs, or additives, just clean, real fish that support healthy oceans and fishing communities. It is nutrient-rich and full of flavor. Wild Alaskan fish is frozen right off the boat to lock in taste, texture, and nutrients like those all-important omega-3s. And it is sustainably sourced, wild-caught from Alaska. Every order supports sustainable harvesting practices, and your membership delivers flexible shipments, expert tips, and truly feel-good seafood. My favorite fish variety right now, I went from salmon to cod. I'm back on salmon. It just feels like the season is right for it. Try it risk-free, 100% money-back guarantee, because if you are not completely satisfied with your first box, Wild Alaskan Company will give you a full refund, no questions asked, no risk, just high quality seafood. Not all fish are the same. Get seafood you can trust. Go to wildalaskan.com/Alex for $35 off your first box of premium wild caught seafood. That's wildalaskan.com/Alex for $35 off your first order. Thanks to Wild Alaskan Company for sponsoring this episode. I do kind of want to, like, you know, walk with me through this uncertain future, right? Which is the great bleaching of America, where I guess the only people let into the country are white Afrikaners who are fleeing some kind of political situation in South Africa.
Yeah.
What does that do to our country? I mean, in the near term, I guess, because I don't know, wildly unhinged, like, you know, optimism I have that this could maybe not be our destiny, but that someone with more empathy and thought will take the reins. But in the near term, what does it mean for America to be saying, we're closed to people of color, and if you're here, you might be kicked out? We are a place for white people, and we champion white heritage, white history, and the white future. Like, what is that? Yeah. What does that mean for us culturally and economically, do you think?
I think culturally, to start with that, you've already seen what they're doing, right? They're erasing the existence of anybody Black from the sort of arc of heroes in the United States. There can't be any Black ones. Women, indigenous people also erased from our military history. Even in Europe, in art installations, you can't have any Blacks. You can't have that. You can't have any, you definitely can't have any queer people. They've got to go. You can't name ships after Blacks or women or gays or brown people. All of that's gone. So now we have a history that looks like an Aryan history, as opposed to the real history of the United States. You know, the enslaved hands that built the country vanish and disappear, and it becomes this sort of, you know, ode to Europeanness. So we're sort of want to be little Europe, and pretend that the brown, the Black, the Asians, you know, the Chinese didn't build the railroad. None of that happened. It's all just white men standing astride the continent, building a civilization all by themselves, you know, and moving aside the savage, you know, people who were sacrificing babies over a flame. And thank God they came and Christianized them and took their children to, you know, schools where they could teach them to be little Europeans. And that's it. That's our future. We are the white baby Europe. Well, here's how the real Europe is faring. They are an aging, slowing economy. Their median population age is the oldest on Earth. Their GDP is probably, what, half of ours?
Mm-hmm.
Their one kind of viable country, Germany, ironically, is struggling with its own crisis of migration because their economy is fueled by migrants from the East. And so if we want to be Europe, then we will inherit their economy. We will inherit their situation. And their situation is that they are wholly dependent on Africa for resources. They're wholly dependent on Asia and the Near East for workers. They don't have nurses in Britain because of Brexit. Their economy is a sluggish mess. Europe isn't exactly thriving. Meanwhile, the youngest population on Earth is Africa, where there will soon be a billion people. It's the biggest emerging market on Earth. We don't want them. You look at Asia, where they're producing more scientists, more people who understand the new technology that's coming out of places like India and Pakistan. We don't want them. They're a large part of our H2B visa population China. For a reason. China, which is essentially going to dominate the earth economically. It is dominating Africa, dominating the Caribbean. And we're leaving the world to themselves while we're going to retreat into becoming baby Europe. But by baby, I mean elderly person baby.
Like Benjamin Button Europe.
Benjamin Button
Europe. Like the really old baby.
Correct. And without immigrants, Europe is essentially economically dead. And without immigrants, we will be too. So I wish Tom Homan and Stephen Miller, who technically isn't really in the club. I don't think he knows that. I think he thinks he's an Aryan.
Right. That is
not.
The irony, isn't it? Someone don't tell Stephen he's not part of the club.
He's not. Well, I mean, even Cash Patel thinks he's going to be in Valhalla. And the white people are like, baby, no. You're not invited. You're not even white. I mean, but poor Ramaswamy's like, Valhalla, they're like, Val, get out. You're not in our club. You're not even, you're a Hindu. Get out. And so they think they're in. I say, do the experiment. Our economy will be trash. There will be no one to do construction.
I say, don't do the experiment.
You're not going to make it. It's not going to work. It will just crush our economy. So culturally, we'll be a dry, seasonless chicken with no Lowry's, no seasonings whatsoever.
No garlic.
And then culturally will be also that chicken, but really expensive.
Chicken keeps coming up. I talked about chicken this week with Stacey Abrams because George Packer was telling Tim Miller that he was making a capon for Thanksgiving, which is a castrated male chicken. And we were talking about, I was listening to this, it's a chicken. It's like a chicken with no balls. And who in politics is most like a capon?
Democrats.
And they said Mike Johnson.
Oh.
I mean, fair. I mean, you could say that there's some capons in the Democratic Party, but it is, you know, people wonder why it's worth worrying about this moment and fighting against it. And then hear, when you really just pause and think, look at the master plan that's been laid out. Look at the ways in which the news cycle has been perverted to their ends. Look at the way in which violence is perverted to serve their own ends. And look at the violence in turn that they are perpetrating on American citizens and undocumented citizens alike. It doesn't matter if you have your papers or not. What matters, as you say, is the color of your skin and what they're trying to do. Yeah. Well, and that's ironically, I think, what maybe the Afrikaners and the Americans increasingly have in common is a deep and sort of emotional and quotidian understanding of what it's like to live in a fully segregated society with the haves and the have-nots.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's so interesting is that the kind of intellectual drivers of this are white South Africans, the financial and intellectual drivers. You know, the PayPal mafia are, you know, a crew of South African whites who, you know, wrung that country dry, their people, I shouldn't say they themselves, you know, their people wrung that country dry of its resources, left it a cold shell. And then after they lost apartheid, their people bounced and came over here to do the same here. They fundamentally do think apartheid is a better system, that, you know, slavery was probably a better system, that Jim Crow was better. And so there's this yearning backward toward a mythic past that they feel was somehow better. But it was only better because people like them were unrestrained and unconstrained and unregulated. And they just want to be unregulated. And, you know, I think they think in their mind that they tell themselves this is best for everyone and that those of us like you and me are effectively children who need to be governed because otherwise we're just preternaturally violent and incapable of civilization. That's what they think. And so they don't think they're doing anything wrong. In fact, they think they're fighting the Antichrist because the Antichrist is empathy and kindness toward immigrants and loving the immigrant, all things Jesus said. Well, that's Antichrist. Christ is Antichrist for them. And so, you know, we're in this bizarro world where because they have so much money and because they control the president and because he's fundamentally racist, he goes along with it. And that means everybody that's rich wins. Big oil gets to have Venezuela, you know, big tech gets to own all of our media and they get all the government contracts and they all win. The whole rest of the country loses. But in the end, when you gut the middle class, which they think is all white people, but it's multiracial, you end up with a country where there are not enough consumers left to have a decent economy.
Well, you have no labor either.
And you have no labor,
you have no innovation, you have a declining birth rate, and you have basically a dead country, a withered country.
A withered, dead, but very white country. And I think that, you know, some of them, they'll bleach. They're like, as long as it's bleach, they're like, it's good. You know, like when you overbleach your sheets and you think, but they're super white. Yeah, but they're shredded.
That's exactly right. There's holes in the sheets.
Yes.
And how good are they now?
Yeah.
We've taken this metaphor as far as we can take it, Joy.
Nowhere else.
Does everybody understand what we're saying here? I thought about this topic and I thought, who do I want to talk to about this topic? Who is going to have brilliant thoughts and just incisive analysis at her fingertips? And there's one
and
lady.
You settled for me instead.
please God. It is so wonderful to have you here to talk about this terrible thing that's happening to our country. And I am so grateful for your perspective on all of this and your wise mind. And I'm so happy to be reunited with you. And I'm going to keep asking you to come back on this podcast as long as you'll answer my text messages, or even when you stop answering them, I'm going to keep texting you.
I shall never stop answering your text messages. I'm always just so happy to hear from you. I'm so proud of you. And look, I did some of my best journalism at Ms. Now. We have to make sure we don't want to dead name them. We're going to give them their name that they said they are. They are Ms. Now. So Ms. Now, we thank you. And, you know, some of my favorite memories are hanging out with you, my friend, because we did some like badass shit, you know?
Yeah,
like
did.
It was so much fun. And I just look back at it with only joy because we really
had with only joy. Me too. Yeah. I look back at it with the only joy and only joy. Thank you, my friend, for your time. I appreciate you.
I love you. Thank you, friend.
Before we go, I want to hear from you. Have you been impacted directly by the Trump administration and its policies? Maybe you've experienced changes to your job or to your healthcare or at your kid's school. If so, I want to hear it all, whether these policies have impacted you for better or for worse. Send us an email or a one-minute voice note at runawaycountry@crooked.com, and we may be in touch to feature your story. And thank you to everyone who has written in already. Last but not least, don't forget to check out the show and our rapid response videos on your YouTube channel, Runaway Country with Alex Wagner. Runaway Country is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Ilona Minkowski. Our producer is Emma Illick-Frank. Production support from Megan Larson and Lacey Roberts. The show is mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis. Ben Hethcote is our video producer, and Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Audio support comes from Kyle Seglin. Our theme music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. Katie Long is our executive producer of development. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.